Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
If you want to join us here tonight, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. There's a pretty big story that I've been wanting to hear about for some time, ever since Oregon did their decriminalization, I believe it was in 2020, of small possession of pretty much all drugs. We talked about it, of course, here on Free Talk Live as longtime advocates of ending the insane war on drugs. This was heralded, and I think rightly so, as a step in the right direction, a big step, and one that, of course, had been taken in Portugal almost 20 years prior to that, to much success. So the question was Oregon going to have a similar level of success as Portugal had done? We're going to look into that here tonight. The Atlantic has done a detailed story about it, and I want to get into it. But here with you, it's Ian.
And Jay Noon.
Indeed. So that's coming up. But I did just get back from the Barbie movie with Bonnie and I went to see it. She got all dressed up, or should I say dolled up. And she looked very nice, and I really enjoyed it. I have to say it was a lot of fun. I mean, having been your typical boy growing up, I was certainly not playing with Barbies. I didn't care for Barbies at all. Don't know much about the history. Don't know much about the doll. But I really enjoyed the Barbie movie. And if you can look past they beat you over the head with messages about the patriarchy. I mean, it definitely does have a political
was it woke?
Message. I mean, I think you could definitely say it was woke.
Okay.
But it was a lot of fun, and it was very, very entertaining. So if you know what you're getting into, I think you're going to have a good time with it. Just, you know, be prepared for the political messaging of it. If you can look past it, I think you'll enjoy it. So that happened today. And then, again, as I said, I wanted to get into this story here about the decriminalization of hard drugs. We've seen over the decades a lot of work being put into just simple decriminalization of the soft stuff, specifically cannabis. There hasn't really been much else. We've seen a few towns or cities here and there decriminalizing magic mushrooms or psychedelic mushrooms, and they've had great success with that from what I've seen in places like Denver, I think Oakland, Santa Cruz. There's even a couple of Massachusetts towns that did mushroom decriminalization. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yep.
Yep. So, and that's been very, very successful. Those efforts have been led by, in many cases, military veterans who've come in front of city councils, and they've testified and said, you know, their PTSD has been cured by the use of magic mushrooms. I mean, there's just some amazing stories out there. And, of course, we've talked about the studies that have been done on PTSD and, you know, serious depression, anxiety, things like this that people have been suffering, and that they actually, when they take a dose of psychedelic mushrooms under a therapeutic environment, they can actually defeat these problems.
I know, right? Three couples that were having really rough relationship issues. And they did guided, essentially, mushroom trips or mushroom experience, psychedelic experience with someone who isn't actually a shaman, but is very, like, in that type of, you know, shaman, whatever. I don't even know what you call it. But she's like a guided, mushroom.
She's
you know,
had her training.
She's been to Peru and done all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyways, and those couples saw two of them at Pork Fest this year, and
they were still together.
They're happy. They're okay. Together. They're like, you know, I actually have recommended some this therapy to some friends of mine who are very, very right leaning conservative, and they're like, oh, I'm not going to do that. And then And then another friend of mine who's a farmer down in Massachusetts, I recommended this to him and his wife a couple years ago. They were having some issues, and the wife wants to do it. The husband's not convinced yet. We got to work on him a little bit more. But, yeah, there's, you know, the one thing I got to say about mushrooms, like people who do mushrooms, you know, it shouldn't even, like, mushrooms should not be classified, like, in the same thing as, you know, like, these,
heroin.
Like people who do heroin are basically a waste of time. They're just a negative drain. The people who do mushrooms, I know a whole bunch of people that, you know, do mushrooms recreationally.
Sure.
And they're fine. They're productive. They work, you know, and
some of them even do micro dosing, which is where they take a very small amount of psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. They take a very small amount of it, perhaps before a work day.
Yep.
And it's not enough to have a psychedelic experience, but it is enough to shift them in a direction that they feel makes them more productive or something like that. There's a lot of people in, like, the tech industry, apparently, that are into this.
So, you know how, like, so I have cows. So people are like, oh, can I come on?
They like mushrooms, don't they?
Look through your cow manure. And I'll tell you, right now, out in the forest, like all around my property, I've never seen so many mushrooms.
There are a lot. Well, it's been a lot of rain.
Recently. My pigs aren't on the forest right now. I got three little piglets. They're just in kind of a small pen. But when I had pigs last couple of years, and I let them onto a new part of forest, and there's like a whole bunch of mushrooms, first thing all the pigs are doing is going after those mushrooms. Mm. They're just eating every mushroom that they find. They just
makes you wonder.
And they don't die. And actually, pigs and humans are, well, pigs have a really tough digestive system, but pigs and humans are super similar, you know, with the way their organs are and, you know, everything's aligned. In fact, when you butcher a pig and you're, you know, taking the guts out, all of those guts are sort of in the same setup, very similar to what humans are. It's a mono gut system. But pigs, you know, obviously have very strong digestion. I'm not saying because a pig can eat it, a human can.
Yeah, be warned. Just let's put the disclaimer out there. If you're interested in trying these things, there's a couple disclaimers you should know about. One, do your research. Go online. I recommend Arrowid.org, Arowid.org. There's a lot of information about all kinds of drugs that you can take, both pharmaceutical and illegal, and, you know, you name it. Lots of good information there. Do your research first. Secondly, do not just go pick random mushrooms and eat them. These can be very dangerous. The psychedelic ones are very specific ones, and you really have to know your stuff to go out into the woods and be able to do this.
I walked my fencing on my cow pasture 2 days ago, and I noticed that there was lots of mushrooms where the cow on the side of the fence that the cows don't have access, and I couldn't find a single mushroom anywhere in the cow pen. So I haven't seen the cows eat mushrooms. I've definitely watched the pigs do it.
Okay,
but
Cows not in there with the pigs, or are they separated?
Well, they're separate. Okay. They don't really jive.
So presumably, it's the cows eating the mushrooms. Is that a thing?
I think so, because there's just no mushrooms in the cow pen.
Interesting.
I just never see them. You know, they're growing out of like everything, like right outside the cow pen. So I think the cows just eat them as they pop up. The only thing I can think.
Well, as far as like convincing conservative type people to take on psychedelic mushrooms for therapy, I think that's where these soldiers come into play. Right?
Oh yeah, and there's a lot of good studies that have been done on that.
You put a soldier in front of a conservative, anything that comes out of his mouth, they're going to take seriously.
Yeah.
Right? So you just got to get them to know one of these guys or two of these people that have had these experiences, and I think that would shift their perspective instantly, because they have the conservative types are like, oh, drugs are for hippies, and then if you can shift that to no. It's for anybody. Look, here's some guys who were in the military that say this actually cured their PTSD. And you know, people listening to them, it changes minds.
And my shaman friend who, talks about this mushroom stuff and like plant medicine is what she refers to it or fungi medicine. There's a big difference between, you know, some college kid, you know, looking to party and some guy looking to heal himself.
Absolutely.
Using it. So when your intention is healing and that's what you want to do and you're not, and you do this, you know, like with an appointment with somebody guiding you, There's like, it isn't like you just, you know, order some mushrooms somewhere or go find them, buy them from some guy in a black alley and just go home and eat them. It's more like, you're doing it with, you know, in a specific environment,
right.
With a specific individual who's trained in this, as a spirit guide, essentially, or a guide. I don't know if spirit guide is the right word, but, I know a lot of people who have done this, and nobody has negative commentary about it. Everybody's some people told me that their experience was sort of like scary while it was happening because they've had like these demons,
there's dark things in there,
and one girl was, you know, some really horrible stuff happened to her as a young, I don't know how old she was, and I'm not going to say on air what happened to her, but.
Whatever it was, you're going to peel back that brick wall or whatever that you built up over time, and it's going to force you to look at it. And that's what the dark, you know, scary stuff is.
She was essentially abused as a child, as, you know, and a young teenager, and had no memory of this.
Oh, wow.
And basically didn't even know.
That's crazy.
But she was just very, like, emotionally unstable.
It was affecting her, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but she didn't know what was affecting her. It was a problem because she had went through this traumatizing abuse, and her mind had blocked it out, but the symptoms of the abuse were still there. And I think she did this a couple, maybe 3 years ago now, and, like, she's really good. And she did two of these mushroom experiences, and she's like, I'm good. I don't need any more. I'm cool.
You're done.
I'm happy with life. It isn't like – and mushrooms aren't addictive. Who's addicted to magic mushrooms, you know?
Maybe there's somebody out there, but, I mean, there's certain addictive personalities that just want to get high or whatever, but I agree with you. It's I don't know what the terminology is for that. I don't think mushrooms have the – effect where you build a tolerance to them, which is it kind of sets them apart from other drugs, as I understand it. Meaning that if you were to take marijuana or whatever or alcohol, you're going to build up a tolerance. You're going to need more of it to get to the same results. And I don't think that that's true with mushrooms. So you would think that that would result in more people being addicted to them, but it doesn't seem to have, like you said, it doesn't seem to have that effect on people. It does seem to have the effect of you're having some sort of a permanent change, or at least semi-permanent, if you want it, in your mind, and you take your lessons back. You remember, hopefully, what it was that you were intending to remember from that journey, and it sticks with you. And it's an important experience, I think, for a lot of people. It wasn't mushrooms per se, but I think it was Steve Jobs, who was one of the co-founders of Apple Computers, who ranked his trip on LSD, or maybe trips on LSD, which is another psychedelic drug, on, I think it was the top three experiences of his life, top three most important experiences of his life. So in a lot of cases, people will have a very similar experience with magic mushrooms, and they can put it down and never come back to it.
And another thing happens with, for example, like alcohol, people have withdrawals if they don't get alcohol.
Sure.
Cigarettes, people have major withdrawals. Yes. Coffee, people have major withdrawals.
These are addictive drugs, right.
And, I don't really, I know a bunch of people who use cannabis, and a lot of these people will go weeks or a month or 2 months sometimes, or they're too busy. I don't have time to do it. You know, some say, and it's not like they're, you know, scratching their neck being like, oh man, I need to get some, you know, but these things like heroin and, you know, opiates and like, cocaine and like, caffeine, you know, nicotine. Well, maybe nicotine. I'm not sure if it's the other chemicals in the, in the cigarettes, but,
it's nicotine. I mean, it may be the other chemicals as well, but nicotine is an addictive chemical. I did the roll your own cigarette thing for like a summer, and I was smoking like one cigarette a day, and I could see what the addiction was. Like, I could see why people got addicted to it. It definitely wasn't something I wanted to continue on with, but I could see it. Like, it didn't hook me or anything at that level. I wasn't powerless to it or anything like that. But I could see why some people would have.
But when you take coffee away from people,
they get irritable.
I have a relative who is extremely miserable without his coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with cigarettes, and the same thing with you know, the opiates. Like, people who do heroin, from what I understand, will literally die from the overdose.
I've heard. From not going.
From not having it. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand how that works, but I guess it's a medical fact.
Yeah.
And then, so, like, you know, people put, like, all these things in the same camp. And
it's ridiculous.
It's ignorance. They just don't know, you know, any better.
It is. And so to get into the story here about Oregon decriminalizing hard drugs, and we're talking about cocaine, we're talking about methamphetamine, we're talking about heroin. They decriminalized all drugs, but they included the hard stuff, right? So what does that look like? Well, there's a story here from The Atlantic that gets into it in great detail, and this is something I've been kind of interested in, I mean, very interested in, and I'm glad it's finally, you know, there's been like a good write-up about, you know, taking different sides, looking at it from different perspectives on how this has gone. And of course, as you might imagine, the government has managed to screw this up to some extent. And so we'll get into that here. So here it is, from The Atlantic's Jim Hinch. He writes, 3 years ago, while the nation's attention was on the 2020 presidential election, voters in Oregon took a dramatic step back from America's long-running war on drugs. By a 17-point margin, Oregonians approved ballot measure 110, which eliminated criminal penalties for possessing small amounts of any drug, including cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. When the policy went into effect early the next year, it lifted the fear of prosecution from the state's drug users and launched Oregon onto an experiment to determine whether a long-sought goal of the drug policy reform movement, decriminalization, could help solve America's drug problems. And after all, this is what we've been saying forever here on Free Talk Live, as one of the few voices, I think, in mainstream media, if you want to call us that, you know, we're on broadcast radio, that actually advocates for ending the insane war on drugs. Now, I think most libertarians, given the opportunity, if there was a button to press that just eliminated the war on drugs, all of a sudden the cops are no longer arresting people for possession, growing, selling, etc., I think that, you know, we would press that button in an instant because we see the destruction of the war on drugs. We see certainly that there are people who are addicted to drugs today, regardless of whether there's a war on it or not, right? Most of the video you see from these Skid Rows all around the country, I think you've mentioned Philadelphia.
Yeah, Kensington Street, Philadelphia, yep.
A lot of these cities, big cities, have these areas where there's a bunch of dope addicts, you know, living in tents and just stumbling around the streets and hanging over. It's such a, they call it nodding out, I think, for the heroin users. Maybe it's fentanyl. I don't know what it is, but it's really horrible to look at, where these people are just, they're still standing, but they're completely bent, like, all the way down.
Yep.
And it's really weird. I actually saw somebody in Keene that was, they weren't standing up, but they were just kind of sitting up in front of the library today and just hanging down. Like, that person is on something.
So when you opened the show, you mentioned this has happened in Portugal. I wonder how
decriminalization.
I wonder how easy it is to get an EBT card or to get on some form of government assistance and just get free money in Portugal.
Cause, it is Europe. I don't know.
Because the big problem here in America is, all the things we're talking. So here's the problem with the sort of drugs in general is it's being magnified and made so much worse by the fact that in America, in American cities, it's so easy to get on welfare.
Mm.
So I have asked emergency medical technicians. These are the guys that ride around ambulances and respond. I've asked them to. You know, how many of the people who you give Narcan to or overdose from heroin are on welfare?
Because they go through their wallet or their pockets or whatever, right?
So the guy from Springfield, Massachusetts that I know, and I talked to actually three of these guys from Springfield, because they're guys that, one of them used to be on the fire department, and just guys I know from, you know.
You grew up in that area.
Right, and they're EMTs, and they all work in Springfield, these guys. Another guy works in Wilbraham. I talked to, and then another one I talked to in Manchester. They all told Manchester, New Hampshire, all told me the same thing. If the guy who's either you know, if the guy who overdosed guy or girl hasn't had his pockets cleaned out by his buddies, because usually that's what happens is they pass out,
they get robbed,
they just get robbed, yeah. their wallet's gone.
Yeah.
But you know, you go look around and the wallet's on the ground, and you know the ID's mm-hmm. in it, and any cash is missing, and the EBT card is there because I guess the EBT card has your ID on it. Or has a picture on it.
A PIN number or something.
Or something. So you just can't take someone's EBT right. card and use it. You have yeah. to, like, you
it's
know.
It's like a debit card, I think. I've never used this thing. But.
And so anyways, but basically it was, yes, all the people who haven't had their pockets cleaned out have an EBT card
uh-huh.
on yeah. them, is what each one of these.
It's an important question to ask.
Guys said to me. So in a place like Oregon, for example, is very comfortable to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
California, it's very comfortable to be homeless.
Seattle, yeah, sure.
And
Chicago.
So you have these people getting free money from the state.
Yep.
You have them living comfortably in tents.
People respond to incentives, and yep. welfare is an incentive towards bad behavior. Yep. It's irresponsibility.
And then you have the Meals on Wheels type thing. You know, they're showing up to these drug encampments and feeding the people three mm-hmm. times a day. There's even like an interview of a guy. He's got his face all like tattooed up, and he's like, mm-hmm. "Oh yeah, I live in California because." You know, I just
all the freebies.
I get up in the morning and I get high and then I go eat breakfast and mm-hmm. the I forget what he called whoever it is, it's a state agency or a city agency brings them food
yeah.
In the morning.
Doesn't have to do a thing. Doesn't have to lift a finger.
Yep. And he's like he says I get $650 a month. Just because I'm here in California, cash money. And he's like, this is great.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And there's a whole YouTube video. It's like a. It's like a Vice interview that's like 2 years old or mm-hmm. something. And so the thing is, Health and Human Services is creating the drug problem. They're creating the drug demand, you know, with the opiates and the fentanyl. Because
I'm going to say they're making it worse. I mean, there's always going to be, whether Health and Human Services exists, whether a welfare program exists, there are always going to be people who are down on their luck. People who are upset at whatever it is that's happening in life. They don't think life is fair. They got fired from their job. There's all kinds of bad things that are generally going to happen inevitably in somebody's life. And there's a certain type of person who takes those bad apples and then they just keep on going in a downward spiral. Right?
Well, like, so here's the thing. Commonly, your
free
drug
money
addicts,
makes those people worse.
Right. Well, free money makes them just full blown,
yeah.
straight up junkies.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about anything but getting high. And so, for example,
at some point the money will run out if welfare doesn't exist,
right.
And somebody who's getting high because they want to escape from the bad things in their life will hit rock bottom, I think, a little sooner.
Right. And then you have this example of like all these construction workers and builders and stuff and guys that are in those work industries that use heroin, for example. There's a whole bunch mm-hmm. of them, and they work to use their drugs. You know.
There's more coming up here. And the number, if you want to join the show, talking about drug decriminalization, we're going to get into what has allegedly been happening in Oregon in the last 3 years of this experiment, coming up on Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update.
The record-long heat wave is showing no signs of letting up. Over 2,000 records have been broken across the southern United States from California to Florida since the first heat advisories were posted in early June. Forecasters are warning the heat dome is expanding in Texas and the southwest, and triple digits could drag well into next week and beyond. Phoenix, Arizona hasn't seen a high temperature below 110 degrees since the end of June. Tiren Steinbeck, the Stanford University DEI dean who accosted a Trump-appointed federal judge during a Federalist Society event, is resigning from the law school after months of icy relations with the administration and student body. In March, Steinbeck and a mob of unruly law students disrupted a Stanford Federalist Society event for Fifth Circuit Court Judge of Appeals Kyle Duncan. Tim Berg, USA News.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Every day we take steps to keep the people we love safe, but some health risks are easy to miss. Ticks hiding in the yard can spread germs that can cause Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Mice searching for sources of food can spread bacteria and disease. Mosquitoes breed in standing water and can transmit illnesses like West Nile virus and Zika virus. Cockroaches are drawn to water in the home and can leave behind allergens that trigger asthma attacks. Stinging insects attack in defense of their nests and send more than 500,000 people to the emergency room every year. Household pests are a threat to our health. Learn what you can do to protect your family at pestworld.org.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Decriminalization, and especially if you live in Oregon, where they've had an experiment going on now for 3 years that a lot of us have been advocating, especially those of us here on Free Talk Live, for a very long time. Portugal, and they will talk about Portugal a little bit in this story coming up from the Atlantic, a very in-depth article about, well, how's it been going? They've had 3 years of drug decrim. Has anything been solved? Has anything gotten better as far as drug abuse and that sort of thing? Because you have to remember, there's a difference between drug use and drug abuse. And to put this into perspective for people out there, there's a difference between somebody who abuses alcohol and somebody who just has a couple of beers at the end of the night.
Right? Sure. For example, there was a paving company I did a lot of work for in the past, and there was several guys on that paving crew. So I was on the side of an interstate fixing a paver because they were paving this interstate road. And I walk over to the truck, the dump truck, and I open up the passenger side door to talk to the guy who I'm working for, basically. Because that's where he was last time I saw him. Mm-hmm. And the man who I was looking to talk to was not in the truck. But the guy that was driving the truck had a needle in his arm.
Oh, boy.
And he was booting up. And and I kind of knew this guy a little bit. I knew that this was his deal, and and I'm like, hey, where's the boss? And he's like, give me a minute, you know. God. So then he comes out of the truck, and he helped, and I was looking. What I needed was someone to like help me do this like repair job. I couldn't do it by myself. So he comes over and he helps me. And
he's high on heroin.
Totally.
Wow. Okay.
And he was like, he was stellar. I am dead serious. This guy, like, when I worked with him several times.
Wow.
Yeah. And he,
functional addict.
Totally.
Basically. Huh.
Totally.
Amazing.
He drives a, you know, a triaxle dump truck, you know, that's got a gross vehicle weight of 74,000 pounds with a big old trailer behind it that gets all loaded up with equipment to go, you know, do these jobs.
This is a mythical creature you're talking about here. I think they're more common than people believe, but, you know, typically when you hear about heroin junkies, you hear about people who are completely useless. They're laying around the house all the time. They're not getting anything done. The house is filthy, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. And you're saying this guy was actually a productive person.
He's a super good guy to work with.
Amazing.
Really good. Could follow instructions really well. And he was a smart, skilled, ambitious guy. Mm-hmm. And most of his ambition is doing the drug.
Yeah.
He was basically, you know, sleeping in a tent.
Mm. But he wasn't willing to rob people to get his money.
No, he's a hard worker. He worked 7 days a week. And then there was another guy on the job site. He only worked till about 2 p.m. and they would send him home because he was a drinker. And he was, you know, 62.
Couldn't stop him 60, from sneaking beers in, that kind of thing.
He's just, I'm going drinking, I'm not working. You know, you got me till 2, and basically the deal was, I'm starting to open up beers if you don't want me on your job site. They just literally
I knew plenty of guys
home.
Who were just drinking on the job.
So you couldn't get away with drinking on this particular job. There was no way to do that.
Yeah.
So the kid that had he wasn't a kid, he was 30, a few years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid who had a needle in his arm, so that was like the first time I ever really saw somebody I knew like do that. You know, like, kind of like I knew he did it. I didn't know how he did it, but yeah, I knew he did it. But he was like, what do I want to say here? So the story was that he would lose his CDL if he ever had they ever found THC in his urine, and so
which stays around a long time if you use cannabis regularly. It's going to sit with you for 30 plus days or whatever, as I understand it. But a lot of these harder drugs don't stick around that long.
Well, even they're not. So I guess they're not screening for it. But he's like, I take a whiz. You know, he goes, we got to do random whiz quizzes all the time. This doesn't show up.
Oh, interesting.
I had another guy from high school tell me a similar thing. He got into cocaine because he couldn't use weed because of a probation issue, and he was being screened, you know, randomly for cannabis, and so he moved to cocaine because he just, you know, he was one of these guys that needed something.
Wow.
But the guy that was on the paving crew, so there was so basically like a handful of those guys on this particular paving crew that I got to know, they were all doing some level of opiate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of them were going to the rehab center and getting their Suboxone in the morning.
Right.
So that's a, you know, that's a form of opiate, from what I understand. And there's another, like sanctioned, I can't remember what it's called, but Suboxone, and there's a few other things that like, you know, they give you. And like the Suboxone's for free, you know, you just show up and get it. But these guys were all functioning. They were all working, and the thing is like the guy who was putting stuff in a needle in his arm, the way it started with him is he got his foot run over, like 12 years ago,
oxys or something, hydrocodones. Mm-hmm.
Is the way he did it. I know probably 15 hardworking people that I could, you know, off the top of my head right now, that all started with Vicodin and due to an injury, and the doctors. You know, just pushing that, you know, that Vicodin, what was it,
and then the doctor stops at some point because the DEA will come after them if they keep on prescribing these things, and then these guys hit the streets and they have to find another supply.
Right, and then, what was it, the Sackler family who owned the pharmaceutical company that got sued? I forget what the pharmaceutical company's called, Sackler, but they are like a Connecticut family. Mm-hmm. And they own some big pharmaceutical company, and a whole bunch of states sued them over pushing the opiates, and it was kickbacks to the doctors, and, you know, all kinds of things. To, you know, there's a huge conspiracy to get the American mainstream hooked on opiates. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, the thing is, and all the politicians love it, because if you're doing opiates, you're not paying attention to the politician. If you have a, you know, if you're a mom and a dad and you have a, you know, a child or a very close loved one that's hooked on opiates, you're probably not paying attention to the politicians. You don't have time to pay attention to politicians.
Looking for your next fix.
So, well, or even people close to you who are, you know, can, you know, imagine if your kids are, you know, heroin addicts, you know, what kind of diversion is that in your life? Are you going to, do you got even bandwidth left to like decide who's worth voting for or scrutinizing your politicians?
So what do you think the productive guys that were dope users that you knew, why didn't they fall into the welfare trap and just lay around the house?
So some of them have, but actually, so there is a, couple examples now. So I'll first start with the guys, and then I want to talk about women, specifically moms. But so the guys that, you know, are using street drugs because they got hooked on the Vicodin, or the guys that are on Suboxone, methadone was the other one. They're going to the methadone clinic, getting their methadone or Suboxone, and they're working. And then for some reason, they're able to get on disability. Or somehow they get on disability, or they injure themselves to the point to where they get disability. And a lot of these guys are a little too proud. The guys I personally, they're too proud to take the welfare.
They're raised in a certain way.
Or they're like conservative, you know, and they're just, they're not going to do that. But
right. But
one thing I've noticed is, so one of the guys I know, there's a veterans benefit program that if you were like, he was in Iraq and exposed to like depleted uranium and stuff and had some health issues, and he was framing or roofing crew, and he was, you know, using I don't know if he was snorting or shooting, but he was using something, some kind of opiate. And as soon as he got this veterans benefit, it was like they give him like, they paid him like back like X amount of months or something. So he got like a check for like 20 grand, and then he was getting like, I don't know if it was like 4,000 a month or 2,700 a month. I don't remember the exact numbers, but he was getting several thousand dollars a month. Plus he got like a big check. That guy was dead like a year and a half later. He OD'd.
Wow.
And so I know some women that had children, some of them illegitimate, you know, they don't know who the dads were, weren't identifying the dads. Some of them, you know, they knew who the dads were. I think about four of these girls that I grew up with, Palmer, Massachusetts area. And if anybody who knows me, you know, knows me from Palmer, they probably know at least two or three of who I'm talking about. Anyways, as soon as these girls had a little bit of a drug issue, and as soon as they were able to essentially collect the you know, the child benefits, I won't say child support,
okay,
but anyway, state benefits, they're getting the EBT card, they're getting the government assisted housing, you know, one of these things you really can't do as like a 20 something year old and unless you have a kid. It really helps, especially if you don't know who the kid is and you want to, you know, just claim these benefits and, you know, get this stuff. One of the girls was one of them's dead now. She actually died of not an overdose, but a infection.
Oh boy!
And then the other girl, I saw her 2 years ago, and I didn't even recognize her. In fact, this is two girls I hadn't seen them in years, and then I saw them, and I didn't recognize them until they started talking, because, you know, they just looked like something out of like a horror zombie movie.
Wow.
You know, they like just like
wasted away.
They didn't have like, most of their teeth were gone. They, you know, you could count every bone in their body. They were like skin and bones and like
gruesome.
And actually both of these girls have the same name now that I think about it. And I've known these, you know, most of my life. And so talking to the one girl's mom, I'm like, when did this happen? How did this go? She's like, well, as soon as she decided to move out of my house and start go after, you know, for collect from the state, and she moved into a Section 8 housing in Holyoke on, you know, Skid Row, basically.
Yeah, you're going to be surrounded by a bunch of scumbags.
And that's where she wanted to move, because that's where the dope was.
Right.
And as soon as she, like, right there, it just went straight down. Now she's, like, full-time drug addict, because she doesn't have to, like, you know, she doesn't have to be sober to like put any money together to pay rent. And when she was living with her mom wouldn't tolerate it. So she would basically do it enough to where mom didn't realize it was happening, and she was, mm-hmm. you know, working at the local Dunkin' Donuts or something. And
well, don't you think, Jay, that if she'd only been arrested, that would have made things better for her?
No, definitely not. She'd been arrested a few times.
Of course she had. I mean, I figured you were going to say that.
In fact, they've both been arrested.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of them were arrested.
And what they do as soon as they got out of jail, they went and they got high as soon as they got out. I mean, I guarantee you.
One girl, she was in jail getting the stuff.
In jail.
She had a 6-month sentence. She had, it was check fraud, it was theft, it was mm-hmm. all kinds of things. And, like, she's telling me this stuff.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, well, I was just giving sexual favors to one of the prison guards, and and it was all women's prison, and there's male prison guards. And basically any girl that wanted to, like, bang a prison guard or do a,
get
something
whatever she wants.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
So they were able to, no problem Suboxone, no problem methadone, and every once in a while it was a treat of some kind of like Vicodin or something.
Right.
What she said.
This is yet another example that is, I think, one of the most persuasive on why the war on drugs is so pointless. They can't even keep the drugs out of their own prisons. And how could anyone ever expect that they're going to be able to keep drugs out of people's hands who aren't in prison? I mean, it is an absolute fantasy. But we started this conversation by getting into this story from The Atlantic. And let me tell you, there's a lot we can talk about in here, Jay. So I'm going to dig a little deeper.
Go for it.
So they're talking about the drug decrim that went into play in early 2021 after being voted in overwhelmingly, by the way, 16-point margin, 17-point margin. Early results, they say, of this reform effort, the first of its kind in any U.S. state, are now coming into view. And so far, they are not encouraging. State leaders have acknowledged faults with the policy's implementation and enforcement measures, and Oregon's drug problems have not improved. Last year, the state experienced one of the sharpest rises in overdose deaths in the country and had one of the highest percentages of adults with substance abuse or substance, they claim, use disorder. During one two-week period last month, 3 children under the age of 4 overdosed in Portland after ingesting fentanyl. For decades, drug policy in America centered on using law enforcement to target people who sold, possessed, or used drugs, an approach long supported by both Democratic and Republican politicians. Only in recent years, amid an epidemic of opioid overdoses and national reconsideration of racial inequalities in the criminal justice system, has the drug policy status quo begun to break down as a coalition of health workers, criminal justice reform advocates, and drug user activists have lobbied for more compassionate and nuanced response. The new approach emphasizes reducing overdose, stopping the spread of infectious diseases, and providing drug users with the resources they need, counseling, housing, and transportation to stabilize their lives and gain control over their drug use. At least that's the supposed plan. Oregon's Measure 110 was viewed as an opportunity to prove that activists' most groundbreaking idea, sharply reducing the role of law enforcement in the government's response to drugs, could work. The measure also earmarked hundreds of millions of dollars in cannabis tax revenue for building a statewide treatment network that advocates promised would do what police and prosecutors couldn't: help drug users stop or reduce their drug use and become healthy, engaged members of their communities.
Those community outreach, I got a couple of commentaries here.
Sure.
So first off, what the article is basically saying, so I make sure I comprehended it correctly, is that the drug problem has increased.
That's the claim.
Right. So
there's some statistics coming up.
And I believe that's because of, you know, the direct welfare payments that these guys are getting, these drug addicts. So when you have someone who is, like, working for their drugs, like these, you know, roofers, contractors, guys like that, that, you know, are doing that kind of stuff, they're, you know, essentially, best I can tell, like, maintaining. They're not, you know, just, you know, hammering themselves. They're not being taken care of.
They're going to get fired if they hammer themselves.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
And so, but, like, how many of these guys that are doing the drugs in the drug encampments are on welfare? Is
like
really
you said,
the bottom
probably
line.
A lot of them are.
And what makes this look really bad is, like, you know, the same thing with the gun violence stuff. So, like, the Democrats like to say, oh, the United States is, like, number 3 in the world for gun violence. Well, if you take the top five violent cities, Chicago, you know, L.A., yeah, Baltimore,
out.
You know,
yeah.
all these cities that have...
The murder rates, yeah.
The murder rates are insane due to the gun crime. Plus, also, if someone commits suicide with a gun, you know, they call that homicide also, which that should be axed. But basically,
you're saying you factor those out from the statistics.
Right.
Then what do you get?
So the United States is like number 189 out of like 193 nations
right. well,
in the world.
Well, these are areas in which... Guns are prohibited, basically.
Right. Yeah, so all these areas where the gun violence is the most, you know, mm-hmm. Chicago, Baltimore, L.A., things like that, or places like that, you can't have a gun. New York City, you can't have a gun. Even in, like, a New York police officer can't even carry...
Well, you can't legally have a gun.
Right.
But there's plenty of murders going on in Chicago, and I bet yep. you a bunch of them involve firearms.
Well, so you take the firearm statistics from these prohibition places, the top mm-hmm. five prohibition right. places on in the United States of America, and now the United States of America becomes like, you know, the safest, the least amount, you know, almost you know, three from the end of gun violence. And so the problem with, you know, you have the conservatives, the way they're looking at this, the way that they see this is, oh, we're going to turn in, you know, to Oregon. The whole country's going to turn. My town's going to turn into Oregon if these, you know, if drugs get decriminalized or become legal. And the thing is do, like Portugal, you know, has had fantastic, you know, results with this. But I just, for some reason, is it easier to get on welfare in Oregon or Portugal?
I don't know.
That's really.
You would think Europe's got plenty of welfare going on over there. But they do bring up Portugal here in a moment. But, you know, it's interesting you bring up gun prohibition because this is one of those issues where conservatives have a huge blind spot, and they have for, you know, generations. They can see, a conservative can understand how gun prohibition doesn't work, right?
Right?
Like, they can see that pretty clearly. You look at the cities where guns are prohibited, there's more violence, there's more murder, there's more, you know, danger from criminals that don't care about the law and don't care that guns are prohibited, and they're going to go ahead and carry them and rob people or whatever, and you can't defend yourself legally in those places. They get that. It's pretty clear. But they don't understand that drug prohibition is the same thing, right? Like, prohibition always has the same negative effects. It's
yeah.
just slightly different depending on what's being prohibited. So if you prohibit drugs, if you prohibit guns, you get criminals using guns, so you do more crime. If you prohibit drugs, people do the drugs anyway, and then they commit crimes to get the drugs yeah. in a lot of cases. Whereas if the drugs were regularly priced and available at a Walgreens or something like that, like you can go and buy a bottle of aspirin for a dollar or whatever,
yeah.
then you don't have people knocking over convenience stores and putting knives in people's backs in order to rob them.
I think we're going to see a situation in this country where the U.S. dollar, you know, gets to the point to where essentially that EBT card welfare just doesn't work anymore.
Hmm.
You know, especially after the CBDC or FedNow, whatever stuff gets, mm-hmm. you know.
That started, I think, yesterday,
yeah,
FedNow.
And FedNow and gets rolling. And then that, you know, tremendously hyperinflates. To the point to where the welfare system doesn't work. We're already seeing where the food subsidy programs aren't really working that well. Mm. The crop subsidy programs aren't working that well because...
Well, do you think that's because the prices are going up faster than the welfare is cranking up the numbers? I mean, because in theory, they could just print more money and chase around and create hyperinflation. I mean,
when I say food subsidies, welfare, it's like, you know, I'm talking like farm subsidies.
Corporate
agricultural okay. subsidies, because what's happening with, you know, the farm world is a subsidy, you know, doesn't mean people are going to actually show up and work mm-hmm. in that particular industry. And also the subsidy, like right now we have...
No, in a lot of cases they're paying them to not grow things.
That too.
As I understand it.
And a lot of what's going on right now in the country is we got massive crop failures all through the Midwest, Colorado, Nebraska, hailstorms, rain, a bunch of corn and wheat has just been destroyed. It's useless. All over the place, so we're going to see some of that effect. But so those are the kind of things that you, no matter how hard you subsidize it, if you can't get the people to show up to do the work, and the weather doesn't cooperate, and you know whatever,
mm-hmm.
The food production, you know, is really having a big issue. Well, it also, I think, on the other end of that, the food's going to get so expensive that these subsidies for food, for example, your EBT card is mm-hmm. basically for food. Are going to get to the point to where they don't really work anymore. And then shortly after that, whatever else it is that, you know, these guys are, you know, so when you get hyperinflation, all the drug dealers are going to want more money for their drugs to meet inflation. And I think it's going to get to the point to where the welfare recipients aren't really going to be able to get their fix, get their high, or it just collapses and it doesn't work. There is
well,
no more welfare.
Well, some of them are going to turn to crime if that's the case.
So in places where, like, you can't have a gun, like Oregon, mm-hmm. when all these druggies or California no longer can get their government paycheck and get their money, you're going to have some issues because these people are going to be desperate.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oregon does have a lot of gun restrictions that are statewide. So it's not just Portland that's the problem with guns. It's Oregon as a whole is not friendly towards.
And so, like, for example, in Maine, New Hampshire and Vermont, where, you know, there's lots and lots of guns, and almost everybody carries guns. Mm-hmm. They're all, I think,
the drug addicts are a little more cautious.
Well, you don't have, like, the muggings and stuff and mm-hmm. the violence. And
because it won't go well for them.
Well, what's going to happen is these guys start getting brazen and to the point to where they are going to mug somebody. In New Hampshire, for example, is probably not going to go over
too well.
Yeah,
they'll end up dead.
Right, they'll end up dead, and that'll be the end of that, and it, you know, all sort of fix itself in New Hampshire. Where, like, Oregon, California, you know, New York.
I think
York,
that's a good that's
might
a good
be a
point.
Bloodbath.
But so, unfortunately, what we're saddled with here is this experiment is being run in this place, as you pointed out, in Oregon, where people are not free to defend themselves against any kind of attacks from these junkies. And that's going to definitely skew things in a more negative direction.
In fact, in New York State, New York City, for example, according to Luke Radowski, and I believe him, if you if somebody mugs you and you fight back and you hurt them,
you're getting arrested,
or you killed them or something, you are definitely being charged.
So the day after the measure passed, Cassandra Frederick, the executive director of Drug Policy Alliance, does a lot of good work. They're one of the nation's most prominent drug policy reform organizations. She issued a statement calling the vote a historic paradigm-shifting win and predicted that Oregon would become, quote, a model and a starting point for states across the country to decriminalize drug use. But 3 years later, with rising overdoses and delays in treatment funding, even some of the measure's supporters now believe the policy needs to be changed. In a nonpartisan statewide poll earlier this year, more than 60% of respondents blamed Measure 110 for making drug addiction, homelessness, and crime worse. A majority, including a majority of Democrats, said they support bringing back criminal penalties for drug possession.
And I blame welfare.
Yeah, well, they're not blaming welfare, unfortunately. They're saying, well, we screwed this up. Let's just bring the cops back in and just start arresting our way out of this problem again. I mean, it's just a total failure of looking at this in any sort of a compassionate or creative way, believing that the violence of the war on drugs is going to solve the problem that it didn't solve for 50 years prior to this.
And 100 years ago, you could get any drug you wanted, but there was no welfare 100 years ago.
This is true. And there were still addicts, but they weren't robbing people. To support their habits because it was like 10 cents for a huge bottle of heroin. There's more coming up.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some, while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a one-week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this one-week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.